Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Mark Pollack, who is a CFP, Certified Financial Planner, and member of the Financial Planning Association. For the past 12 years, Mark has worked as a financial planner with Ameriprise Financial in Vienna, Virginia. And prior to coming to Ameriprise, he worked at Merrill Lynch in Alexandria. He completed his studies at Gettysburg College, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa with an honors degree in economics, so he knows what he's talking about. Mark and his wife reside in Falls Church, Virginia. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, Wayne.
So with the looming fiscal cliff, and I tend to be focusing on a lot on that topic on the first segment of the show, and a high level of uncertainty regarding future tax laws, let's discuss the importance of a concept called tax diversification. What is tax diversification? What do you mean by that?
Sure, Wayne. Well, if you think about the concept of diversification in the traditional sense, usually it's applied to investing. Quite simply, we live in a highly uncertain world. No one, not you, not I, obviously not Bernie Madoff, can consistently predict what's going to be the best performing investments. So conventional wisdom has dictated that one should diversify their investments. Quite simply, spreading your assets across multiple asset classes, regions, sectors, etc. So really, we're just borrowing that concept of diversification and now applying it to one's taxes, specifically in making your investment decisions, deciding before I decide which mutual fund or which stock I would like to invest in, I want to decide what type of account I want to own that mutual fund or that stock in, because Right. That's really going to dictate when I pay taxes on that money, how it's taxed, and how I can... what purpose I can access that money for.
So we've got different ways in which different types of income are taxed. We've got interest income, which is taxed one way. We've got dividend income, which is taxed another way. And then we've got pre-tax dollars and post-tax dollars. So we have retirement assets. They may not be taxed until we pull it out later on, right?
Exactly. And to complicate things further, all the rules could change starting January 1st.
They will change.
Yes, stay tuned.
One way or the other, they're going to change. I can't imagine them staying exactly the way they are today. You know, just as a refresher, the dividend rate, and that's what's scaring a lot of people, is going to go from 15% potentially up to 43.6%. Is that right?
That's correct for people in the highest income tax bracket.
Yikes. So do you feel that that's going to have an impact on the way people invest? In other words, are they going to get out of dividend paying stocks, particularly if they're in the highest tax bracket?
Well, on the margin, it could have an effect, especially in the short term. Really, what I've been advising clients is let's not make a knee-jerk reaction. First of all, we don't know for certain what the changes are going to be, so we don't want to...
dump all your stocks.
Exactly. And the second factor is, there's still very compelling reasons to own dividend-paying stocks, especially with low interest rates. People need income, especially retirees. And if it's a good core investment, we don't want to let a term I'll use is let the tail wag the dog. We don't want to dump a great long-term investment just because of tax reasons.
I think that's good advice. Now, I understand that you view the world as, in terms of owning assets, in three separate buckets. Can you tell us these buckets in which the assets are owned?
Yeah, sure, Wayne. What I've tried to do is simplify all this complicated ways different investments can be taxed and break it down into three categories. So I'll start with the first, and that's an account where any money that you put in, you put in pre-tax. So just to make sure everyone understands what I say when I'm saying pre-tax, you know, just to operate in round numbers, I'll say I'm earning $100,000 and I put 10% of my income away pre-tax.
Okay.
So that $10,000, it's going to be as if I'm taxed as if I'm earning $90,000.
Right. At least when you put it away.
Correct. And then once that money goes into the account, as long as it remains in the account, it's going to grow tax deferred. Again, just so everyone understands the concept of tax deferred. any interest, dividends, if I'm buying or selling stocks or mutual funds, exactly, capital gains, I'm not going to have to pay any tax on that as long as the money remains inside that account.
Right.
Now, once I ultimately do draw money out of this account, as you were just alluding to, I am going to have to pay tax on the money, and it is going to be taxed as ordinary income. So it's going to be taxed just as if I had earned the money. And this is really going to be your employer-sponsored retirement plan. So this might be a 401k. If
right.
you work at a nonprofit, it may be called a 403b.
Right.
If you work for the federal government, it may be called the Thrift Savings Plan or the TSP.
Mm-hmm.
So advantages in terms of this account are you get an immediate tax benefit in the year that you contribute to it. The investment should be able to grow and snowball a little bit quicker because it is tax deferred, so you're not having to pay tax on that money every single year. The downside is you do eventually have to pay the piper. So when
right.
you draw the money out, you are going to have to pay tax on it. It is going to be taxed as income. You also generally need to leave the money in there until retirement age. Typically, the IRS views that as 59 and a half. There are a few exceptions to that, but that's the typical age there. And also at age 70 and a half, you're going to be required to start withdrawing some of that money and paying tax on it every single year, whether you like it or not.
So that's the first bucket. It's the pre-tax bucket that grows tax deferred until you pull it out, and then it's taxed as ordinary income at whatever rates are in effect at that point in time.
Exactly.
What's the next bucket?
So the next bucket is money that goes in after taxes. So this is money that I've gotten maybe through my paycheck that I've already paid taxes on. Each year, if that investment earns dividends or interest, I'm going to pay taxes on that, paying as I go.
Right.
And when I go to sell that investment, if I've been fortunate enough to make a profit on it, then I will have to pay capital gains when I go ahead and sell that investment. So this would be just really your plain vanilla. The investment terminology is a non-qualified account, but you know, most people would think of it as just an individual brokerage account, a
taxable
mutual
fund. Account. I've heard it called
exactly
that.
A taxable account.
And so what are the advantages of holding it in that bucket?
Well, the big advantage, at least for the time being, is the capital gains rate is only 15% on long-term capital gains for most individuals.
That's for another few weeks.
Exactly. So we'll really need to wait and see and what happens there. The other big advantage, and we don't want to overlook this, is this type of account is generally totally liquid. So there's no restrictions of when you can take the money out or anything of that nature. Obviously, the major downside to this type of account is the IRS has their hands in your pocket every step of the way. It's post-tax money going in. If you're earning money as you go, they're taxing it. And if you make a profit in the end, they're going to tax it.
Of course, there's ways to shelter the income from tax by investing it in stocks that are growing and appreciating in value and generating what we call unrealized gains over time. And then, of course, when you do sell it, you have to pay tax on it. But that's one way to shelter it. Or municipal bonds is another one, isn't it?
Yes, municipal bonds. And we've kind of, I'll put that more in kind of the third bucket that I'll touch on. But you're correct in that municipal bonds are definitely going to shelter from tax.
So what's the third bucket?
So the third bucket is money that you put in after taxes. So just like in the example before, but once the money goes in there, it's really going to accumulate tax-free, meaning you're not paying tax on any interest or dividends that's accumulating. And the real kicker is when you go to ultimately withdraw the money, no capital gains tax. It's all tax-free. So this can be particularly valuable for someone who has time on their side, who has a long time for an investment to really compound and grow. Obviously, being able to realize all that growth tax-free can be a huge advantage.
Now, there's a difference between tax-free and tax-deferred. What I would refer to as tax-deferred is 401k or an IRA that's not taxed, that is taxed on withdrawal. Tax-free, on the other hand, there are some vehicles that we can use for tax-free investments, like a Roth IRA, right?
Exactly.
What are some other examples of that?
So a Roth IRA is a common example. Another example, a relatively new one, is the Roth 401k, or if you work for the federal government, a program they've just rolled out, the Roth TSP.
Uh-huh.
Works exactly the same tax-wise as the Roth IRA. One nice advantage of that is it does not have the income limitation. So a big drawback of the Roth IRA over the years has been if you make over a certain amount of income, you're not eligible to contribute, whereas with the Roth 401k and TSP, there is no income limitation. So regardless of if you're, you know, Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, you can still still put money in a Roth 401k.
And of course, one of the favorite ones of a lot of advisors that I've had on the show is the ability to shelter income using life insurance.
Yeah, life insurance works as well. That's, you know, certainly a more complex strategy. You know, for the purpose of today, I won't go super deep into that, other than to really say that, again, to keep in mind, if you're going to evaluate that as a strategy, first thing you want to do is look at your need for life insurance. Again, you don't want to let the tail wag the dog. You can go out and get a life insurance policy and shelter this money from taxes. Meanwhile, you may end up paying more in the cost of insurance and fees on the life insurance policy than you're saving yourself in taxes. So it can work, certainly, if you have a need for life insurance, but that's something you want to evaluate in the bigger picture context of your comprehensive financial plan rather than just doing it solely for tax purposes.
What are the downsides of the third bucket? The third bucket being, I guess it's after tax, but it's... Maybe it's not always after tax, but it's a bucket that is tax-free, where the income
Sure.
grows tax-free.
The downsides are really going to be specific to each type of vehicle. So, you know, we touched on the Roth IRA. The main drawback there is just going to be the income limitation, in that some people just aren't going to qualify for it.
Which comes back into effect in 2013, right?
Absolutely. For a Roth 401k or Roth TSP, the main downside is you can only put a maximum starting in 2013 of $17,500 into a 401k or into your TSP if you're under age 50. If you're over 50, you can do a $5,500 catch up, so a total of $23,000. But with that limitation, you know, whether you do the money pre-tax or in this Roth 401k, the total cannot exceed $17,500. So obviously, if you're going to take money from that pre-tax and instead put it in the Roth, it's great. You're going to be saving money and it's going to help you in terms of accumulating tax-free in the future. But it means your take-home is going to be a little bit less as opposed to if you had just put that all that money away pre-tax.
The 401k, most people rely on that as their primary retirement vehicle. And I'm nervous about people who do that because it may not be enough to save for retirement.
Yeah, that's a great point, Wayne. There's, you know, a couple things that come into play there. Number one is it enough? Is just maxing out your 401k enough? You know, what I would say is it really depends on everyone's situation. That's the importance of doing a comprehensive financial plan and seeing what your goals are and doing those projections to make sure that you're on track with savings. The other importance of not totally focusing on your 401k has to do with what we were talking about with tax diversification. For the most part, most people are making those pre-tax contributions into their 401k.
Right.
So a lot of times I'll sit down with clients who are preparing to retire a year or two from now, and they say, hey, Mark, you know, we want to get together, we want to develop a plan, and as part of that plan, we want you to help us manage our taxes in retirement. How can we lower our taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, well, let's look at your situation. And they've got all their money saved for retirement in a pre-tax 401k. Well, at that point, there's not really a lot of planning that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
When we need to take that money out, it's going to be taxable as income. So the idea with the tax diversification is to try to get some money in these other buckets earlier on as we're accumulating assets. And that hopefully will give us the opportunity to have more control and more flexibility to manage the taxes in retirement.
We're talking with Mark Pollack, who is a certified financial planner with Ameriprise. Mark, how do people get in touch with you?
Sure, Wayne. I can be reached at 703-307-9096, or I can be reached via email at mark@ampf.com. That's Apple, Mary, Paul, Frank.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thanks so much for having me, Wayne.
And all of you, listen in next week for another special topic and special guest that hopefully will help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. I'm Wayne Zell, and thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Have a great week.